Hey, welcome to the Beat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
Chris.
How are you, Jeff?
Doing all right. It's, you know, we're in the middle of summer. It is hot. It's all get out. And, you know, it is kvike season for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's burbling away.
We've gotten through the busiest part of my summer with, you know, vacation and summer camp and, you know, all the little stuff. So I'm kind of settling into another routine of, okay, well, it's...
I have a little time on my hands.
A little ability to cause trouble. I've talked before about getting into growing mushrooms, and one of the people I buy mushroom spores from just had a big, like, Christmas in July sale, so... There's a lot of trouble to be made there. Looking forward to some of these, you know, the wood lover kind of like the enoki and lion's mane and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's some tasty stuff going on soon.
I may ask you to show me how to do some of that, because that sounds like another awesome mushroom I haven't done yet.
You know, if you figure out the sanitization steps of timber, sanitization steps of making mushrooms are just a little bit more intense.
Really?
Especially if you're doing the wood lovers that, like, you know, you don't really need to do sanitization or complete sterilization. You can generally pasteurize, like, what I'm doing for a lot of, like, my oyster mushrooms is just taking, like, the little barbecue wood pellets you get for a smoker. I'll pasteurize those in 5-gallon bucket with boiling water. And okay. Then add my grain spawn to that. And, you know, the oysters are easy to grow as hell. They're kind of like fermenting apple juice. It just wants to come.
Okay, cool.
So.
Well, back to mead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But the great segue, but let's thank our people listeners.
Yeah,
our guys, sisters, our sponsors.
Thank you guys for coming and tuning in week after week, listening to us. And like we mentioned last week, you know, we are on a ton of these podcast networks here, whether it's like iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict.
Let's pull it up.
Yeah,
that list. Let's tell everybody what they got here. So if you got one of them already, you're already in line here. So.
Absolutely. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Pocket Casts. We're on iHeartRadio, Pandora. We've got Deezer, Podcast Addict, Player FM. We've got Podchaser, Castbox, Good Pods, and Podcast Index. So, you know, if you're using an app that connects to one of those, you can easily download us, and you know, it makes it that much easier for us. You don't have to go to the website and download from there or listen to on the website. You have other options, and you know, if you have one of those where you can, you know, subscribe and send us reviews or give us 5 stars, or
we'd love it.
Whatever engagement you can do. God, please. It just helps engagement for us and getting all our content to other people that might be interested.
So yeah, because this is, you know, our coats are a mile long and covered in Velcro. We would help as many people as we can.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we're not exactly making a fortune doing this.
Well, we'd be doing this whether we were or not. So, yeah, money is fine, but what we're doing, we'd love what we do.
Mm-hmm. This is just fun.
Yeah. This is fun. And Bacchus and Barleycorn, our friends and almost family over there, Jake and his guys, they just ready to help us out with every single question we have, everything we need to get.
Not just us, but anybody that comes through the door, really. If whether you need the information, the equipment, or the ingredients to make something happen, they've got the know-how, they've got the recommendations. They can help you out, for certain. And, you know, again, I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm poo-pooing corporations or anything, but it's a small business. They've been in business for a long time, and they're an integral part of the homebrew community.
They've been up there for over 50 years.
I'm happy to be working with them in this endeavor, yeah. Just, you know, getting people into mead, getting people making better mead. And, you know, if you guys want to support us, let them know that you appreciate them helping out and sponsoring the show. Use our promo code MHP10.
And give yourself 10% off your order online.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, help them out. Help us out. Let them know that you're listening.
And hell, that may even work in store if you say, hey, we've got the Mead House Guys promo code.
You know, Jake's a nice guy. He probably would do it.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think the odds are high. All right. Anyway, so today, the question that did come up for us is, what sets mead and beer apart in flavor and production?
So flavor-wise.
For me, it's night and day. I mean, beer is bitter, sharp.
Right. Well, there are so many different varieties of beer because there are different, regions that have been producing beer using different ingredients, different standards. And you look at Germany as a whole, it's almost like a local tradition of, oh, well, we're in Munich, so we brew this. We're in Heidelberg, so we brew it this way. There are just so many little regional delicacies in different parts that they have their own traditions and their own crops that they like to use. Go to Belgium, it's very much the same way, except there's also monastic traditions where they do very high ABV brews in some of these monasteries and stuff like that, just as a way to make money for the monastery. And there are so many different little communities and traditions where there's a lot more variety in terms of mead. And I think wine is in that same boat where you go to the Champagne region of France or whatever, and that's
And in our own personal experience, Jeff once upon a time taught in the Czech Republic. And quote him when we first, early part of our friendship, there was a beer place on every corner. I mean, and they were all different. And you find a place you like best, and that's your hangout.
Well, it's not to say they're all different. There are, half a dozen to a dozen different brands. And it's not unusual for the signage for the particular brand outside of the bar to be bigger than the name of the bar. So, my friends and I like to go to the, I think the name of the bar down the street from our dorm was Sunny Bar, but we just called it the Staro Bar because the beer they had on tap was Staropramen, and it was a 3 foot wide circular sign that had the Staropramen logo on it, and in small letters around the bottom edge, it said Sunny Bar.
Okay. And I've been up in the northern part of the Midwest, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and I kid you not, I was going to a fair up there. The Pennsylvania Renaissance Festival is an awesome place, where the it was on an old monastery, and they made all of their alcohols, the beers, ciders, wines, hard alcohol, everything, meat, all was done in the house. But driving the 20 minutes from where I was staying to the fair, I'd pass by no less than five wineries with the vineyards.
Well, and I think as far as flavor goes, mead is a little bit, to my way of thinking, in an advantageous spot compared to wine or beer, because we're still figuring out what mead is, and that's part of the fun of this
Yeah, and I
conversation we're
love
having
this.
right here, right now, is like, what kind of ingredients can we put in this? Hey, we've got this wild tropical fruit. Let's do that.
Let's do
Hey,
that.
let's use
We
some spices, and let's use this wild yeast they came up with in
and when we
Norway.
have this Middle Eastern Bloc country's honey,
Yeah, exactly.
and the world just opens.
Yeah, and or let's use some, speaking of Middle East, let's use some za'atar spices in our as
Whew.
a tertiary flavor, and we'll get some of that weird lemon and herbiness, and yeah, wild.
So I mean, and if you guys think that this Jeff and I are excited about this kind of stuff,
Yes,
there's
this
so many
is.
spices, so many fruits, so many flavors and types of honey out there. We're sitting here, yes, if we lived 1,000 years, we'd still be doing
Right.
this.
Well, and that's, to me, that is part of the fun of this, because let's face it, if you sent, if wine and mead, I'm sorry, wine and beer have this kind of traditional mindset of like, oh, I'm gonna make a Marzen, or I'm gonna make a a Belgian
Stout
triple,
or triple
whatever.
or a triple Bocker.
Yeah, something like that. You can there are a number of these recipes, and they have established styles. And if you step outside that style, like especially competition, they're gonna go, well, this isn't a good triple, this is a crap triple. If the same way, like if you take, grapes grown in Argentina and try to make a northern French style that doesn't use those kind of grapes, it's just not gonna taste right. And people are gonna go, well, this is a crap version of that. But mead, we don't have that. If you say, I'm going to use some New Zealand hops with my mango mead, and we're going to do the Norsk Vosfike yeast strain, and it works, it's like, cool,
Yeah,
okay.
it's very open and very welcome because we don't have borders or boundaries or the history of that or the elitism, I'm going to call it. I mean, when people in America, a beer cannot be a beer unless it has hops. If it doesn't have hops, you cannot call it beer.
Is that a legal
That's legal.
framework
That's a legal
for
framework.
selling it, or is that a
That's a legal framework for the selling of beer.
right?
You can make beer without hops, but they've got this thing of it has to have this, it has to have that. With meat, it has to have honey, and we're not picky about which kind for the most part.
Well, and that is sold by companies that's not necessarily at the homebrew level, but yeah, the point remains that there are categories and things like that where it has to fit into specific regimental qualities.
Yes,
And
but thankfully in mead, even though it was once upon the thing, it kind of fell off favor and it's coming back now. We don't have this. Well, it has to be this or it has to be that, but it has to be as good. And that's not as hard as you might think. Just what kind of good do you want?
sure.
So, meat of the day.
Meat of the day. We should have gotten to this a little earlier. This is one I've been hanging on to for a little while. This is from Opigard Meadery. This is Evil Spirits Begone. This is a peach apple mead.
I'm sorry, I've got to go now. I'm evil, right? You haven't answered any questions. But this is actually one of the things we just got. It's a full bottle of mead.
And
It's got a dark reddish amber color.
it's a 14%.
Ooh,
And
it's gonna be tough.
again, this is from Opigard up in, looks like Tukwila, Washington. And this is pretty hazy, all things considered.
Yeah, I've gotten past the worry about hey, this is it smells the honey is front.
The honey's good, and it's, there's some peach in that note
Yeah,
too, which
peach.
peach is
The
not a.
peach is on the back, a little middle of back, but
Peach is not that fragrant of a fruit either, so
no,
that's kind of impressive in and of itself. Well, and again, yeah, as far as like the cloudiness goes, these are both very pomacy fruits, so I'm not that.
oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's peaches are an acidic fruit. Apples an acidic fruit. This
It's an
has a
acidic mead.
nice acid bite to it.
It's got the acidness, but it goes down easy.
It has a good crisp finish to it.
Yeah.
It has a nice body to it too. It's got a very like
Reuben-esque, it's very round.
it's when I think of peach and apple mead, I expected something lighter. Like I
This is
expect,
not.
yeah, no, this is a 14% mead in every sense.
This is a heavier mead, in a good way. I'm not trying to make this sound like anything other than
No,
it's a good
yeah,
mead.
this is a good meat. This is a, this is a substantial meat too.
But the fragrance, I can't get over this. I mean, the blueberry and cinnamon last week was. It wasn't cinnamon, it was the oak from South America thing.
Yeah,
It was
the Amburana. That's
Amberon.
right.
But this fragrance of this is just, it's not floral. It's full. It's fruity and full with honey.
Yeah, it's got. It's like a fruity estuary plus the peach plus the. There's a little bit of floral from the honey in the back end, and it has that, that honey character of being sweet.
Yeah. Just in the smell alone. I mean, it's, oh man, this is, I will never start. If I ever did it before, I'm going to stop because every time I try a new mead like this that just gets from nowhere, I don't know where to put it on my scale anymore. I'm just enjoying the mead.
I mean, I'm glad we don't go, hey Jeff, 50-point BJCP rating scale, what do you give this?
No.
Rev no, I'm not that I don't have fun judging, but I don't want to go through
Not all
the
the
minutiae and finite little, hey, what are we gonna rate this? No, this is just let me enjoy my mead while I talk with my buddy and we bullshit a little bit. So we talked about the flavor profiles of mead. Let's talk about the differences in production, because I think that is, to an extent, that's a difference that
It's a
is
huge difference in
substantial.
what's done.
You sat and we brewed a beer while we were recording an episode a long while
Long
back.
time, really early on when I started.
So when I say that I think beer brewing, as far as a time constraint, like it has a lot more upfront work than mead does. Because if you're just doing a traditional or a fruit mead or like basically one ingredient in your primary with your honey, what does that take you to get set up? An hour?
Yeah,
Tops?
yeah. I mean, if I'm doing a single bucket, I'll have that set and ready in an hour or less.
Right.
Not even an issue.
Exactly. That's including a rinse out with your sanitizer.
Yeah.
And it's almost nothing. But we did our Our multi-step with the mash and the barge and the boil, and we were here for hours doing that. Because there are different steps in that initial process of getting the enzymes to convert the starches in the grain into a sugar that the yeast can ferment, getting the sugar out of the grain, getting that grain boiled to the point where it's not going to have anything else to compete with it, and getting hops isomerized, and then getting the wort cooled down to where we can add yeast and make it a beer. It just takes hours. And
And
there,
that's with the kit you have. I mean,
right there, the I'm using the Anvil Foundry little like one vessel system. There are some people that use like a three or four vessel system with different sparge water tanks and things like that, and they have their big ass brew sculptures parked in their garages. There are ways to make this easier on you. I mean, like Aussie homebrewers seem to be great at making shortcuts, because from what I've seen, they initiated the brew in a bag system that was kind of like the go-to start for single vessel systems in the first place. And I think they're the ones that also came up with the no chill method too, where basically, like, it seems silly, but you get an airtight, thick plastic container that you can just pour your just boiled wort into. You seal it up tight to where it stays sterile, and then you just let it sit overnight and come back the next day to pitch yeast in it.
I'm sorry, that sounds like cheating.
I like the spirit of it, of just like, hey, let's make this easier.
Now,
But need, I feel like it's more to do in the long run. You're checking, the gravity a little bit more often, and you're kind of correcting once you get to, in secondary, you might want to add this, that, or the other. When you get to bottling, you need to clear it, and you need to back sweeten it, and you might want to add other flavors. Like, you might want to add some, tinctured spices, or add some oak into that secondary phase, or something like that. You can add oak or spices and stuff into secondary in beer, but I generally don't for a lot of the recipes I use, because I'm not brewing anything that fancy. And the recipe we brewed was kind of a big beer, kind of a late fall winter beer kind of an idea. That by itself was kind of fancy, and even that, the idea of adding stuff in secondary, a little over the top,
But and on that note, that beer is actually ready.
kind of. So if you remember, we had actually we made two beers with that, because I was using my single vessel system is a 10-gallon brew system, and that can go 6 or 7 gallons of beer at the end of the day. A lot of that is space for sparging and moving stuff around. But we were putting something in excess of 20 pounds of grain in there, because I was making a wheat wine, which is a heavy-bodied style of beer that's not used very much. And then I was going to further augment it with honey for, making that brag. My suspicion was that there was still going to be a lot of like those sugars stuck to the grain. So we did up what's called a party guile, where basically you add more water on top of it. You bring it up to that sparge temp again, that temperature where you're separating the sugars
From the grain,
from.
and you're getting the rest of the sugar out is what you're trying to do.
Right. Basically, you're just taking a second pass at that to get more sugar out. And then, I did all the steps with that. I boiled it, got it into a fermenter, and I added a little bit of honey and some dry hopping too, to just add a
One
little
thing I want to
extra.
ask you, the term party gale, what is that specifically reference to?
That is basically like taking a second run at the grains. Yeah.
Because I got that from what you're saying, but I want to make it clear for what we're talking about.
And there are a number of traditional breweries, especially like in England, that do this a lot. And they'll take their second or third runnings and kind of blend it to make different beers. But this is just something that I've never tried before and wanted to give a shot at, because I knew, obviously, with this much grain going into a single vessel fermenter, which does not have a lot of what they call brewhouse efficiency. Whereas, like, you have, hey, if I'm going to have 20 pounds of grain, I'm going to expect this much sugar out of it. And the amount of sugar you get as far as your gravity versus how much you could expect, that's efficiency. 75 is really good for efficiency's sake. We're probably somewhere in the 60, mid-60s for single vessel systems.
No, okay,
And
so
so,
not bad.
yeah, but there's still plenty more sugar to acquire from this. And that's the logic of this is that I've got such a huge grain bill, I'm going to have plenty of opportunity to get usable sugars. And basically, I got a bonus beer. And so my bonus beer is ready. I lost a lot of my initial measurements from those two batches.
Okay.
So I didn't really bother
Give us
with.
a range. I mean,
Yeah.
but did you get roughly what you're aiming for?
I went a little low on both of them just because, again, brewhouse efficiency with a single vessel system isn't great. But the cool part about making braggots is you can cheat and get that target gravity with honey.
Okay,
And
well,
so
doggone, more honey. I'm crushed.
I didn't add very much honey to this one. The second runnings, actually, I got a fair amount of sugar on this. I think it was in the mid-range of 1050s, and I just took it up to about 1060. So this is a 7-8% beer at end of the day. And I think I used my orange blossom honey, maybe 3 pounds of that to get that for a 5 gallon batch. It wasn't very much at all. And then I dry hopped it with I want to say 2 ounces of Mandarina Bavaria hops, which is a German variety of hop that has been crossbred with something to give it a little bit of that, as the name would imply, orangey flavor. So,
Jeff actually poured this out for us today. He had
yeah.
chilled waiting for us.
I poured this out a little while ago, but it's still got a nice white head. It's a wheat beer at its heart. It's about half wheat and about half barley, so it has a little haze to it, but it's a medium kind of gold flavor, medium kind of gold color.
Was worried about you, Jeff. We're barely speaking again. That's two shows in a row.
Apparently, I'm talking faster than I'm thinking, so.
So that never happened with either of us,
No,
so
not at
no,
all.
gross.
And you know, this is just a basic lawnmower beer, I think. It's not got a lot of flavor to it. The Mandarina Bavaria I probably should have used more of because it would have more of that nice orangey kind of nobly flavor. You want to
Yeah,
try a little
I
sip?
do want to try it. And we've said this before, I'm not a beer person because I am allergic to hops mildly, not horribly, but I wanted to try
Yeah.
this.
You don't get very much of the honey. It is it feels more like a beer than a braggot,
It
really.
does. It hits the top of the palate really hard. I'm not a big beer fan,
No.
and I'm sorry, it's not for me.
I guess I'll just have to finish this
Yeah,
myself.
If you feel the necessary need to throw the year mead my way, I'll take care of that for you, but I don't think that's going to happen either. But I'm not a big beer person. I know, strange for an American,
Right.
but.
Well, you know, the thing that I think was a small victory is that I've got 2 cases of this bonus beer that basically came for free from the beer that I was making before, and I spent the all I really spent was, you know, however much that 3-ish pounds of honey cost me and 2 ounces of hops.
In a little
So
bit of
yeah. So as far as just making a basic little weedy lawnmower beer for my
is
summer.
weedy. I'm not saying it's bad. It's the bitter of the hops that hits me, and
Yeah,
I'm not a
yeah,
fan.
yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad beer in any capacity. I'm just when I drink a beer, it's like it's attacking me. And I'm not, and that's why I drink
Sure.
mead.
Yeah. No, I'm. I was not expecting rave reviews from you on this one, but you know.
If for those of you who drink beer out there, you'll enjoy that beer. I can only guarantee it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, no, it's. I wouldn't put it up against some of my favorite microbrewery kind of guys and
there's
doing
very little
really.
we make that we'd put up against a serious microbrewery.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a nice little something something for my end of the evening. And for whatever reason, I've been drinking a lot less during the week. Like, you know, we'll have a full glass here and get a little toasty during an episode. Sometimes, like in midweek, I'll finish work and I'll get dinner started and I'll have a beer with dinner and maybe have another beer or two, or I'll have a glass of scotch and maybe another glass of scotch. Lately, I've been done with one, if I even finish one.
Yeah,
So
having
I don't
one
know.
watching the chickens.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's cool. Yeah.
So.
No shame there. All right, so we got the parting gall going there. So okay, the difference between mead and beer that I've noticed just from I've never drinking beer except with you that one time. Beer is a hot process. You have to boil.
Yes.
You have to you're What you're actually boiling water at 212 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, you are boiling the water for a solid hour, and you go into it knowing, hey, I want 5.5 gallons of beer so that I get five with my, once I rack off the crud at the bottom, I get 5 gallons of beer. So I'm going into this boil with like 7.5 gallons because I'm gonna lose 2 gallons in the process of
And
this
when we
hour
were
boil.
boiling, we were in here in his garage, right? It was hot.
Right. It was
It was
hot,
steamy, and it was, winter months.
it was like February or March, I think.
And but this place was toasty. And but mead is done at room temperature, low temperature.
It's basically ambient, and I think mead is more of a, I don't want to say contemplative, but you're taking your time with it. You taste a little, you watch, you wait. It is more of a patience game than beer, because I think really, beer, once you get through that day of work to make a beer, you put it in a fermenter, you're gonna rack it at some point, you're gonna maybe rack it to a keg or put it in bottles at some point, but the bulk of your flavor work is done in that one day. Versus mead, you're kind of
The first day is not much, and there's a little bit here and there along, but a lot of work's at the end.
right. It is more of a, there's a lot more tweaking to be done towards the end than there is like right at the beginning. So they're almost opposites in that way. Except you never really need to heat the meat up. And if you have recipes that say, hey, boil your meat and get skim off the scum, don't do that. That's stupid.
I mean, I've seen the historical mead, tasting history with Max. Love the guy, don't get me wrong, but he made a boiled honey mead that made my soul wither just a little bit because the recipe, he did as the recipe said, like you should. He didn't think it was horrible, but I didn't think he liked it as much as he was trying to parlay. But he had that kind of okay. He's taking little tiny sips and kind of talking a lot around it, but. He boiled the honey so black, as according to the recipe, he says boil it black. I'm sitting here, and he even I think if I recall correctly, he said it was a little ashy, which I like mead because it's a lighter fruit or lighter honey or a little more, in my opinion, joyful flavor than ash. And again, he's going through history and doing the history thing. Nothing wrong with that. This is how we laid our foundation of how to make better stuff. Cooking has gotten better pronounced over the centuries. From cooking on spit to cooking on rotisserie, I mean, it's been huge.
We've improved the tools, we've improved the techniques, we've improved our understanding of the ingredients. I mean, we have gone leaps and bounds for a reason, but it's interesting and important to understand where we came from in there. And that's kind of why I like following Max's stuff too. But
I love, I mean, don't get me wrong, I subscribe and I love following him. But when I saw that meat, I'm sitting here, I'm gonna pass on that particular one.
yeah, no, there's better ways to make a bouche, like we talked about last
Last week,
week.
yes.
Anyway.
But that's how we did that. Now, one thing that Jeff and I do a lot of, and we talked about last week, when we make a traditional meat, a trad, we don't do that a lot, simply because a trad is a trad is a trad. It could have little characteristic notes, it's different, but it's just honey wine.
Yeah, and it's like I said, I probably should challenge myself to make a good try at some point, because it's there is nowhere to hide there. You've got nothing
Either
else
it's
to
good or it's not. It's good or it's good, okay or not.
Right.
It's got the same scale, but there's nothing to hide any problems you have, and that's cool.
But
But that's why I like using fruit
yeah, or different flavors and
and
things like that.
flavor.
Just the contrast and the ability to mix and get really interesting novel combinations is part of the fun of this to me. And I'm
Absolutely.
sure it's the same for you.
And what I was gonna do now. I do, I've done so many types of mead. I mean, and today I'm going to share my dragon fruit mead recipe. And because, but I want to talk about adding fruit flavor to mead because the fruit you're using has a direct proportional, how much you use is direct proportional to how strong the flavor is. If I'm using a strawberry, I'm using more. If I'm using a cherry, I'm using less.
Apparently, if you're using raspberry, you're using a lot less.
Oh my God, yes.
From everything I've heard, I need to make a raspberry at
I've
some
never
point
made a
too.
raspberry either.
And
That's a deficit in our repertoire there.
and apparently it's so tart that you need to use very little of it to get the right flavor. But I want a good raspberry flavor if I'm going to do a raspberry
meat. So. You know, when I make my blackberry or my lemon or my cherry or my dragon fruit or my Arona, I want that flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want that to be up front, right in your face. This is where I am. So I'm heavy-handed.
Excuse me.
When I make a 7-gallon batch of blackberry mead, I'm using a gallon of Vintner's blackberry juice.
Right. And, well, that's actually light-handed if you're using that for 7 gallons, because
they're rated for 5, I know.
Yeah, but you're also adding a not insubstantial amount of honey.
I'm doing like a 14%, so I'm using a lot of honey.
Right. Too. And if I remember right, the Vintner's harvest are like a 10% if you follow package directions and make it for 5 gallons.
Yes, so they are for 5 gallons. So I'm a little light, but I...
You're also really punching it on the honey end.
Yes.
So
I like them sweet. I like them fruity. But... I have known people that use as little as a cup of fruit juice mm-hmm. per gallon.
Fruit juice or fruit concentrate?
They said juice. I'm just going what they said to me verbally.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So
then that's really light. I mean, I would have trouble pulling that out in taste.
Yeah, that feels personally. Like nothing at all. Even like it maybe it depends on the fruit, like elderberry juice. Maybe a cup per gallon is plenty.
Yeah.
For example. Maybe just off the top of my head.
You know, for peach, no.
Or pear.
Oh my gosh. You're losing all.
Would you? Yeah.
I mean, I would have to use a pear concentrate almost exclusively mm-hmm. to get a pear mead.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. And like we talk about more than once, making an apple mead, a cider or something like that, don't use water. Just put cider in.
Put cider in. And that's what I do. I mean, I'm fortunate to live close to the Lewisburg Cider place. It's like an hour or so away. And I will just go get gallons of cider and dump it in my bucket and go from there. Mm-hmm. That's how I make my apple pie.
Yeah.
And secondary, I'll throw in my spices and it comes out pretty good.
Yeah. They, you know, if you can get unpasteurized Lewisburg, it's fantastic.
But whatever you're going to use, you have to get past the flavor of sweet.
Yeah.
First of all, strawberries without sweet don't taste like a lot.
No.
Watermelon without the sweet and watermelon tastes a lot like water. Peaches without the sweet is very mild too. So if you're going to use anything like those.
They can have a lingering acidity to them, but yeah, they are a light flavor fruit.
Yeah. If you're using a light flavored fruit like that, add more. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's directly proportional. I mean, well, it's actually abnormally proportional.
I would say, generally speaking, if you're doing whole fruit, 2 to 3 pounds is probably a good starting point. If we're talking about stone fruit or strawberries and things like that, you definitely want to go more on the 3 side, if not a little above the 3 side. And if you're talking about raspberries, blackberries, more concentrated fruit flavors, berries
pound,
other than strawberries.
Pound and a half.
Yeah, you can go on that 2 side to pound and a half. And I think those are good rules of thumb, but this is, again, like so many other parts of this hobby, you know, you kind of need to...
How much of that flavor do you want there?
Right.
If you want a lot of that flavor, act accordingly. Because I almost guarantee you, if you want a lot of strawberry flavor, you didn't put enough strawberry in there. I can almost guarantee it.
I have said before, we'll say again, I made a mead where I put like 4 pounds of strawberries per gallon in there. I tasted it after it got through secondary and went, I wish I had more strawberry in here.
And we talked about my chocolate strawberry, you know, months ago, where I actively added in, before I go to secondary, freeze-dried strawberry mm-hmm. and a lot of it to pop up the strawberry flavor. Now, since it's aged out, it's still good. The chocolate kind of diminished a little bit, but strawberry's still there.
Yeah, no, this, again, this is, there are so many different factors, and I have to imagine, like, the variety of strawberry, the time of year it was harvested, whether it was grown in, like, a Mexican greenhouse and transported, you know, 20, 30 days.
20,000 leagues.
in refrigerated trucks or grown locally and, you know, harvested just yesterday. All of that is going to matter in terms of flavor, so.
And we talked about growing your own fruits, if that's what you want to do for this.
Yeah.
It's not a huge amount of work, but it is work. You know, how much time do you got?
Well, and I have to imagine if you're making a strawberry mead with homegrown strawberries, you're going to need a plot of some land, sir. Or
nowhere close to a lie.
A few columns of that, those growers.
Or just have a farmer that has strawberries and go see him And I have guys who grow blackberries, strawberries. I can, they say, "Hey, come over and pick some." And I do. And I do. I will reap the benefits of, I'll pay for the benefits of your work, buddy. But there are things, there's a couple of things that Jeff brought up. And, if I, one time I mentioned, Jeff, I want to do a pumpkin.
Yeah.
And he said, add butternut squash.
Don't not add butternut squash. Just use butternut squash instead of pumpkin.
Yeah, that was it. But use butternut. And since I was going to use it, and what it is, I roasted it and scooped it and mashed it up, and then I used just that. And when I added the spices, I'll be honest, when I was done, I wish I would have added more of everything I put in it, more squash, more spices, more everything. It was very mild. One dab just wasn't as much of a punch as I wanted.
Right.
And I probably, next time I'll probably add some lactose to it for a whipped cream type feel.
Sure.
But I pumpkin itself doesn't have a lot of flavor.
No, the butternut squash gives you an almost identical flavor profile. Almost identical.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the people that say, "Oh, I can taste the difference," if I gave them a butternut squash and a pumpkin in a triangle test, like we did with your son's
Yeah.
the cheat meats he made,
Yeah, cheat music.
I'm guessing they would have failed that the same way we failed that one.
Yeah, and the odds are at least pretty good.
They're real damn close, but it's like 25% more sugars in that butternut squash per pound or per like by volume than it is in pumpkin. So like, it's kind of an obvious,
It,
yeah. It's
yeah. This isn't a cheat. This is using what you have available to do what you get what you want. And the other one I want, that we talked that you told me about is if you're making peach mead, add apricot.
Right, like about a quarter of your fruit bill, up to a quarter of your fruit bill. If you add apricot instead of peach, somehow it just makes the peach flavor truer to the nature of peach, and that's more of a flavor thing than a sugar thing, but it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I don't know if any of you do this. I do know that I will never, ever in my lifetime make a watermelon mead.
Well, yeah, no water. I think Vintner's Harvest has a watermelon, like,
They probably do.
yeah, and I think if I was going to make a watermelon mead, I'd use that instead of like trying to get watermelon, because to get the flavor, like, no, I have to imagine you'd almost have to like freeze distill the watermelon juice first, so you just get more concentrated watermelon flavor before you even bother to ferment it, because I'm not even sure how sugary watermelon juice is in the first place. You know, it's watery by nature, by name.
And yeah, you'd have to use something a massive. I mean, the freeze drying the fruit would not be out of line at this point. I mean, it's just. I'm sorry. There's not watermelon is slightly sweet and has a little bit of a texture, and that's all I got.
Right, yeah. No, and I've heard of people making a watermelon mead and using like the what is it, the Arizona iced tea, watermelon tea, as a flavor addition. And because it's, I don't think it's artificially flavored. It might be, but it is supposedly is fairly true to watermelon flavor.
But I'll take your word for that. But I mean, I want I, my flavor. I like flavors that are very present in the moment when I'm drinking. But that aside, using your fruit is okay. You have to decide. We've done all gone this before. You're using fresh fruit. Are you using a concentrate? Are you using juice or syrup? Those are different. You, for me, like I said, I am a little light-handed. As far as proportions for my blackberry vanilla and my blackberry, but I'm also honey heavy. Just to, I said I was going to do this, I'm going to do this now that I'm thinking about it. I made a 1 gallon batch of dragon fruit mead.
Yeah, let's talk about the dragon fruit.
Now, in this batch, I used 3 pounds of honey. It was kind of high. My starting ABV was 1.140.
Okay.
A little bit high, but not,
And this is a 1 gallon batch,
it's
right?
a 1 gallon batch.
Okay.
And I used. And I used 60 ounces, almost a th half of the total volume of dragon fruit juice.
Okay.
This was pre-squeezed, all no fillers. I checked the labels, everything, no preservatives, anything. In fact, it was getting to the point where they said, "Well, if you'll take that, I'll give you 20% off because otherwise we're going to throw it out." But it was still within date, so I took it.
Sure, yeah.
And then I added the rest of it. I filled up the rest of the way with water, which is roughly a cup and a half or so at the end.
Okay.
I mean, what I didn't measure my water per se because I was just trying to figure out the 1 gallon bottle to just move my neck. And I was just trying to get finish off what it was. And to that, I added a half teaspoon of peptic enzyme because it didn't gonna ha wasn't going to have a lot of pulp. It was a filtered juice.
Sure.
But I wanted it there just in case something came up.
Yeah, I mean, they're just because it doesn't have pulp in it doesn't mean it doesn't have pectin in it.
Yeah,
it makes it cloudy. And yeah, I followed.
And it was slightly cloudy, but I'm not happy with it. I used half teaspoon of OptiRed to help preserve my flavors.
Okay.
And I used 71B yeast, and I used the whole package. And it was a gallon. I could have used 2 grams, and I've been fine. I didn't want to keep it. Then I used a tablespoon of Gopher.
Okay.
I was about middle ground for Gopher. And like I said, I started out at a 1.140 for my gravity, and I let it go. Now, when it finished, it was 1.020.
Okay.
So it was around 15%, a little higher. But I was thinking it would be a lot higher than that. But it just is, after about a month and a half, it just stopped.
Well, and, you know, alcohol tolerance for 71B is 14. So if you got to 15, yeah, you did it
right. I did great.
Yeah.
But the flavor itself, now, did we try that one recently?
I can't remember if we did or not.
If we did, I'll bring it back on another show and we'll try it again.
I feel like I was excited to taste it, and I'm now sad that I don't remember if I tasted it or not.
Yeah, but that's fair because I don't remember either. And I've drunk this stuff, so. It's not a strong flavor.
No.
It is a very forgettable flavor. I mean, they're not saying it's a bad flavor in Tabasti, but keep in mind, I did 60 ounces of fruit juice to a cup and a half of water, roughly, with my honey. That was almost a waterless mead.
Right, yeah. No, and like we were talking a little bit, I saw a video. It actually came out while I was at camp, so I sent it to you before I got a chance to watch it. But man-made mead, Garrett over there was making a waterless pineapple mead. Oh, pineapple. I love pineapple.
We should do that one.
And it was like, oh, it's waterless because he's just using canned pineapple juice. That kind of feels like cheating.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I kind of get where he's coming from, though. Just, I'm pretty sure I've made a pineapple mead doing exactly that years and years ago. Just using the pineapple juice. And yeah, no, you will get a lot of loss because there is pulp in that pineapple juice and it settles and it's not great.
Good.
But yeah, no, with a lot of these juice products, you know, coming pretty close to waterless or just going waterless in general and using only the juice,
it's legit.
Yeah, it's probably the way to go.
Yeah, honestly. It really is. I mean, what is that Hawaiian pineapple wine? You can simmer the rind and the core. And I'll look that up later. But I have a recipe for it somewhere.
I'm not sure, but there's another one where you ferment like the scrapings and the offcuts. That's a Mexican thing called tepache.
It could be tepache.
And there is a guy, his business is called Rico Tepache. Literally, he sets up in the corner of a parking lot of a vape store in Olathe. And so when my wife and I go to visit my in-laws, we'll swing by there, and he gives you like quart size the deli cup things, you know, of tepache or cucumber lime stuff, or like he's got a dozen different big ass coolers of fruit next to a pickup truck under a shade, and his signs just say like Rico Tepache, and like you know I think he's cash only, but it is the most legit delicious stuff in the world, and I kind of like. I hadn't tried legit tepache before I had gotten some from him. And I got some from him. I was like, okay, A, I need to figure out how to make this myself. B, I need to figure out what he's doing different because I know mine's going to suck compared to this.
And so you're basically saying you've never had tepache before that time.
I might have had tepache, but I can't guarantee it was like a legit, genuine recipe kind of thing from, you know, the traditional way to make it. And I'm pretty sure this was, you know, they took the rinds of pineapples and fermented it a little.
Okay, well, we did talk about this a little bit today. And we talked about maybe doing video bits about putting mead together for a
habit. Yeah, and so just some kind of video engagement with our audience here.
Let us know what you think about that, because we're going to do this, you know, whether you guys love the idea, hate the idea, or whatever, because we want to get a little more information out there. And Plus, pretty kind of handsome. We don't want to get out there.
Let us know what you think is a good, like, what sounds fun. Do you guys want to see us make some mead? Do you guys want to see us, like, we could do a live chat after a recording and just, like, say, hey, we're on Facebook or we're on YouTube or we're on Twitch or whatever the hell. Come and talk to us for 15, 20 minutes or an hour or whatever. And we're a little bit drunk because we've been recording and,
And
we'll just
you'll
chat.
probably win the argument because this is really good stuff.
Yeah, tell us what sounds fun, as far
Because
as,
and not it's not just the fact that we want to get out there to show you what we're doing. We want to show you how to do what we're doing.
Like.
This is we want you to do well, and believe me, the process it took for people to get good at mead, I didn't want to do that. I kept, like when I first started my first batch of blackberry vanilla, I was pretty sure Jeff was going to get sick of me because I called it that much. I was calling a lot because I was terrified. A little bit of hand-in-hand cooperation there goes a long ways.
Yes, it absolutely does. And this is very much a learning experience. You have to develop your own skills as far as just doing it a few times to get an instinct for how this works. Instinct is practice made manifest, really. That's all it is. You kind of go, okay, the meat is doing this, I need to do this, or I need to just chill and let it do that. But by the same token, you can kind of shortcut that and let other people's experience inform you and help you. So that's kind of where we're at as far as, hey, we're trying to make better mead. We want you to make better mead too. And if we can save you a few steps and tell you, oh, well, you should have done this instead of that.
Or do this
Great.
instead of what you're about to do,
Right.
even better.
Yeah.
We'd love to do it. And because I kid you not, I've told my kids most of their growing life that intelligence is what you learn on your own, and wisdom is what you learn from somebody else who did what you who did themselves.
There you go.
Value, take value from that. And but I'm going to take a little side here because we talked about this yesterday, I think, that we're our first experience with mead. What got you into this and what got me into this? Now, I could say easily that you got me into this, and that's 99%, well, 90% true. But I had experience with it before that. And the guy was named Griffin. He was part of the SCA, and he made, and when he said, I'm making some mead, orders came in. Let us help, with this, I'll buy this part if I can get a bottle or two, type of thing. And he made a phenomenal product. And I don't know if he still does it or not, but he was an amazing man. The first time you did was at Oklahoma Fair.
Yeah, well, the idea that it was that easy to make came from talking to the mead maker at what was that?
Was it mead or was it just peach wine you made?
It was mead.
It
It
was
was
mead,
mead.
okay.
Yeah, he had like four or five different flavors,
I remember
and
that. And they were amazing. They were whole fruit.
they were fruit meads, and he had a traditional that was pretty damn good too. For as my comparison by understanding at that time was drinking like Chaucer's. So
Purtle. Purtle. I like Purtle a little better than Chaucer.
I don't even know that I had had Purtle by then.
Okay.
But Purtle is a local brand to us, and they're
Yeah.
pretty good.
They're
And
pretty
as
good.
far as like just making a decent mead, they, if you ask me, he's doing the right way with kind of cheating and making his different fruit meads, because he just makes a traditional and adds the fruit flavors or splits them up in secondary. But as far as production goes, that's kind of the way to do it as far as just like make a big batch in primary. That said, no, when that had to be 12 years ago now,
Yeah,
if
Houston.
not 13 or 14.
Yeah, it could have been Houston more.
Yeah, because
Guys, we've been around each other a long
we've been making meat together for a little while. We've been sword fighting and
being friends for a lot longer.
yeah.
And my first experience with meat was at Renaissance festivals. Here, try this. Oh, that's really sweet. That's pretty darn good. I like sweet. I'm a portly fellow, so sweet is good. And but when Jeff said, here, try this, do this, do this, and I'm sitting here, okay. I mean, Jeff and I've had history. He's not going to steer me wrong. He still helped me out. He had to.
Well, and we're talking to this gentleman at the festival in Oklahoma, it sounded so damn easy.
I mean, he made
Like,
it sound like it was a walk in the park. It is not, but he made it sound
once you get the instinct and the experience to do it,
like it.
there is a lot of degrees to which it goes fairly smoothly, 9 times out of 10. And so I can see the way in which it feels roped to him.
But there was also the guy who made peach wine down in Oakland. He made him 55-gallon plastic drums.
The same guy.
Same guy.
He did. It wasn't plastic. It was metal. But yes, 55-gallon
Okay,
bottles
I thought they were plastic. I don't know why I thought plastic. I mean, it was a long time
with
ago.
mineral oil over the top instead of an airlock.
Yeah. It was bizarre. But and he said, and he broke our heart that day. This is the last batch I'm making. What I'm selling now is the last one I'm making.
He's going out of business.
He
I
was
was like,
going to business,
well,
and we
that's
were
how I
hurt.
started the conversation. I was like, well, if you're going out of business, will you, can I get some recipes or whatever? He's like, oh yeah, easy. This is, you don't even need my recipes. I'll just tell you the basic process. Like, oh.
And bam, 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 and there. And Jeff had it. Jeff has the intelligence to keep track of all that. And I was on a caffeine rush. I couldn't remember anything. It
That was a wild ass fair, though, in general.
was.
That was, I mean, we had, it was 2 weekends, and we had at least one of those, we had sustained 40 mile an hour
Yeah,
winds.
I mean, average wind speed of that weekend was 40 miles an hour day and night. We didn't have sunburns; we had windburns.
Yeah, no, and like when I say our tent blew over,
And just fall over.
it and it wasn't just a tent, because when I say my tent blew over, we're thinking like the little nylon
Pump
super
tents.
lights with you get it like, your camping store, and you take on a they sleep three if you're
Really close.
cramped in like sardines. This was a
Pavilion.
canvas pavilion with iron, or not iron, aluminum tubing, and it was like, I want to say
It
like
was
12 by
12,
15.
12 by 15. It was huge.
Yeah, it was a massive thing.
And this thing blew away and drugged my daughter with it.
Yes, in the middle of lunchtime, she's sitting there, and the tent just goes up, and one of the was like straps or
One of the
ropes or
lions
something
got
like that.
caught around her arm, just drug
Yeah,
her along with it.
like easily 100, 200 yards
Yeah.
into a puddle,
Into a puddle.
pond.
And
And
now my daughter was fine.
yes.
There was a nurse on site. She was, oh, no. Katie was awesome. My daughter was sitting here. I have to go do my show. No, you need to rest. No, I have to go do my show. She was fine. She was absolutely golden.
I just want to say, the even at that age, your daughter had such a theater kid understanding of how this works.
The
As
show must
I
go on.
have to, yeah, like this infuriates my wife to no end. For years and years ago now, I want to say like maybe 7 or 8, I was doing Alcott Center Shakespeare in the parking lot. I was doing Midsummer Night's Dream, and the night before the last show, my heart condition popped up, and I had to go to the ER. And I was in the ER, and of course, even once you get into like, when in my case, when I get back into rhythm, they want to monitor you for a while and make sure like the blood thinners are not going to cause problems and everything's going to stay in system and things like that. And so I called the director that morning, like, hey, I'm still not in rhythm. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the last show. And he's like, oh, shit. Okay, because it's this is just a community theater kind of situation. It's not like, they have a budget at all.
Or
They,
backup.
right. Yeah. So he was like, okay, I have to learn all of Demetrius's lines
Now.
in 3 hours.
Yes.
And the show like starts at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and a little before noon, they're like, okay, well, I think we're going to release you now. And
And you made it.
well, and here's the thing. We get out of the hospital, and we get to my car, and Sheila's like, okay, so you should go home and you should rest. No, I have to go to the theater now. What? I have to go to the theater. I can do my play. But Jeff, you just got out of the fucking ER. Excuse my
But I'm
language.
out.
Exactly.
But I'm out.
I'm healthy now, and I committed doing the thing, so I have to go do the thing now. And she's like, no, you cannot do that. You just got out of the hospital, you stupid, stupid man. And I'm like, babe, I love you, but the show
Must
must go
go on.
on.
And
And
he did it. I mean, we try to do our commitments, and this is, yeah, very much a thing we do.
right. And so, yeah, it's very much a, I understand entirely where Heather was coming from. Like, I have to get up and do the show. Because I show up at the theater, my director is in costume, the best he can throw together at, 2 hours notice, and reading furiously. He's like, holy shit, you're here. Oh, thank God. And everybody else is like, with your heart, are you okay? Like, yeah, well, let's just take it a little easy on the fight choreo this time. It'll still be good. And I'll get through this. Like, holy shit, you came even after you... Yeah, dude, the show must go on.
And yet she still married him. Sheila still married this man.
And stayed with me.
Yeah, and she's still here. I mean, we have great wives, and they are long-suffering wives. We put them through it, man.
They put up with their bullshit and no, well, we also put up with their bullshit,
Oh, yeah,
so
that's true.
it's a little fair.
Give and take,
But
give and take. Anyway,
we're not getting into that.
no. But back to you, but going back, recapping real quick here. Your fruit depends on the intensity of flavor you want. I personally recommend going a little bit harder than you think you need to.
I don't think that's a terrible idea. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm thinking back on this. I think I made my first batch of mead in 2009. I definitely made my second batch in 2013 because my second batch was my like weekend project while we were sitting around Owen's due date. Just like, okay, are you going into labor now? Going into labor now. It was my weekend thing for that, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
well, at
just,
least you spent it wisely.
yeah. Well, and once Sheila was out of that, 6 months or so where she was, breastfeeding regularly and could drink once in a while if she did the pump and dump, and it was out of secondary, she's like, "Oh, this is really good. You should do more of this, Jeff." Okay.
And mine was Jeff got me involved in this. He goes, "Give it a try," and I went to Bacchus and I got my blackberry syrup and I got the things I needed. And my wife was not horribly pleased that I spent that much money to do this thing that I was going to do. And I pestered Jeff endlessly about it, because he had years of knowledge at this point that I didn't have. And he walked me through, and shockingly, I made a 7 gallon batch, so I should have been a one. I made a blackberry vanilla, which I should have been a traditional. I took so many wrong turns in the beginning, but it still came out really good. And my wife at the end was sitting here, "Yeah, you can do this."
Well, I think the point that I meant to make before I got sidetracked and you got sidetracked, I've been doing this for a good long while. I've made a number of batches of mead. I've lost count. I haven't been really keeping count. But I can't really think of a mead that I tasted where I went, this is too fruity.
Yeah, and like I said, go a little heavy on your fruits.
Yeah.
If it's a strong flavor, you can. I think you should do 2 pounds per gallon of this strong pineapple, cherry, whatever flavor.
Sure.
Go 2 1/4,
Two and a half,
two and a
maybe
half,
three.
maybe three, because believe it or not, I have yet to meet, like Jeff said, I've never yet to meet anybody say, "Oh, that's too fruity." I've never had that come up. That's not been a thing.
Too spicy is a thing.
Yeah.
There are certain spices like clove, you can overdo it.
Oh, fast.
Or, any kind of floral stuff like lavender or
Especially
rose.
lavender. Hibiscus.
I don't know if you can overdo hibiscus.
I
Hibiscus
think
is very.
hibiscus can just me, it can just overdone a little bit there.
But lavender, rose,
Oh, yeah.
you get too much of those in there and you're getting more into that like perfume or hospital cleaner smell kind of situation where it's like that is not appetizing at
No,
all.
I do not want to drink
And
Fabuloso.
I think for most spices, I would say like let's go half an ounce per gallon ish for
And in
clove.
secondary, it's always easy to add more.
Oh yeah, it's
So easy to add more.
well, and we should probably talk about the process for making like a tincture and like how to do that at some point.
Yeah,
But
let's look into that for next week or so.
yeah, like just how to like handle that. But tinctures make it so easy because
Oh
you can
yeah.
just do that by like milliliter or drop by drop.
Yeah, and then you can just mix and mix and mix and taste. And do you like it? Do you need more? Need less?
Yeah, and it's so easy to tweak. Again, when you're in secondary, you can start with like half an ounce of your nutmeg and your vanilla and your whatever, and let it sit and go, oh, well, this needs a little bit more nutmeg, but I think the cardamom is there,
Yeah.
right? And so you can just pull that, add more nutmeg, and you tweak it that way. Again, it's easier to add than it is to subtract.
You can subtract. I
No, not
didn't think
really.
so either.
For whatever reason, one time I made a mixed spice mead that had a bunch of, I just had a shit ton of earthy spices, I think, sitting around from my trip to City Market, and like some hops and things like that. And these all have earthy notes ideas,
Yeah.
kind of a
You're
thing.
making a Terra. mead.
Something like that, yeah. And so I threw this mixture of 6 to 8 spices into a gallon fermenter and just let it go. And a month or two later, I pulled it out and went, okay,
Month or two later, dude. Oh,
this was early in my mead making
okay,
career.
cool.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I got no, I got, I'm not throwing shade. I've done worse. Holy cow.
This was sometime in the summer. I was bored. I made a thing, and I pulled it and I let it sit. Like, okay, that's got a lot of clove. That clove is way too much. And so I put it back and I just let it sit and I let it sit. And then one of my friends was like, hey, I'm looking for some mead to bring to my family's Thanksgiving. Do you have any available? Like, yeah, here's my address. Just come over and I'll let you sample some stuff. I'll get you a bottle or so. We tried a few different things that I had. It was kind of between big, like substantial stuff. So I didn't have a lot of like, Jeff's signature, whatever, available.
His pardon gal. No mead.
So one of the gallons I had ready and available was that earthy one. I poured some out for him to try, and he's like, oh, this is really good. Okay, I thought it was too clovey. If you want some, I'll get rid of it for you. I wasn't gonna drink it. And so he's like, yeah, can I get 2 bottles? It's a 5 gallon batch, so it's 40 percent.
That's nothing.
I'm sorry, it's a 1 gallon batch, so it's 40% of the batch.
Yeah.
But I had no intention of this was not that great, so I didn't see a reason to hold on to it. It's like, yeah, dude, whatever. Let me get my auto siphon, cleaned up and get a couple bottles, and I'll just bottle this batch and let you have 2. We did that. I bottled the other 3 bottles worth and had that much left over in the a glass that I just set to one side. Said my goodbyes, see you later, go back in and start dinner, and I got this little glass and I said, oh shit. Oh shit, that's really good.
And you
The clove just kind of mellowed the hell out and mixed with everything else. It's like, oh yeah, that's baking spices plus.
did you write the recipe down?
No, of
Of
course
course
not.
not. Okay.
Why
Oh,
would
and
I
I
do something like that in the early part of my career?
no, that's just silly. That's why you've been telling me from the beginning. Anyway, but yeah, but there you go. Fruity. Add a little more than you think you need. If you're using fresh fruit, it has a lot more than you think you need because fruit by itself tastes like the fruit when you're eating it, but when it comes to wine, it loses so much dimension.
You really, in order to get the full experience of the fruit, you really need the sugar component of it included to
Yeah.
for it to taste right.
And you're
And
not going to get it. No.
realistically, anticipate needing to back sweeten in secondary.
Yeah.
Just anticipate it, even a little. As we have said so many times before, Chris likes it on the sweeter side. I like it on the drier side. I will still go to a semi-sweet on a fruited mead just because it needs that to taste like that fruit.
Yeah.
It just doesn't taste right without it.
When it comes to fruit, be heavy. When it comes to spice, be light.
Yeah. And you can, so many times we're adding spices and things like that in secondary anyway. So, pull it, add more, do what you need to do. Like Chris was saying, was it last week? You can be patient with this as
Yeah.
long as you're following good sanitary procedure.
Yeah, and it's not even hard. Once you get a good sanitary practice going, it just becomes so automatic that it's not a problem to open up your thing. Do what you need to do, close it up, and move along.
And again, it like you said, sanitary practice, and that's just it. It's practice. You get into the habit of doing it right the first time and get it, kind of baked into your system that I do this, I do that, and I do that. You don't need to fuss with it.
Yeah, it's automatic and it's great. But anyway, so that sounds like a good show for us here.
Yeah, I think we've been running a little long this week,
Yeah,
so
a little bit, but
we like to talk. And we had a good set of
And
topics
we
to
didn't
talk about.
diverge at all. No,
No,
not us.
no tangents or
No, nothing like that. We're
stories.
focused.
We didn't talk about weird Renaissance fairs we went to 15 years ago or whatever. And
No, we would never do that. Have a good day, Jeff.
you too. Take care.